Hello, my name's John Dennis. It's Wednesday, the 11th of March. Today, Northern Ireland mourns PC Stephen Carroll, another victim of dissident Republican terrorists.
There is a sense of shock. There's also a sense of fear that we're slipping back to the bad old days.
As fears grow of a new era of violence in the province, columnist Jonathan Friedland gives his view.
There's an understanding now that all of the mainstream political parties, from the DUP right through to Sinn Féin, are in this together.
And in other news, the head of the UN's top climate body warns Barack Obama will face a revolution if he implements the cuts in carbon emissions needed to fight global warming.
In 5 weeks of taking office, this administration has done more than anyone would do in 5 years.
Guardian Daily with John Dennis on guardian.co.uk.
But first, let's hear the news headlines and have a look at the papers with Bill Overton.
Peace rallies will take place today in Belfast and Derry and some towns in Northern Ireland. They've been organised by the Irish Congress of Trade Unions in protest at the killing of 3 members of the security forces, 2 soldiers and a policeman. They're expected to denounce the dissident Republican groups who claim to have committed the murders. A trade union spokesman's described them as delinquents rather than dissidents. 2 men have been arrested in connection with the shooting of policeman Stephen Paul Carroll in Craigavon. We'll hear more from our correspondent there shortly. In the US, at least 10 people have been killed in a shooting spree. Police say there are at least 4 separate shootings across 2 towns in southern Alabama. They're believed to be the work of a single gunman who began by burning down his mother's house in the town of Kinston. He killed 6 people as he drove down a country road in Sampson, firing at passing vehicles. Eventually, he turned the gun on himself. The Wall Street investment banker Bernard Madoff, who is accused of stealing $50 billion, is likely to plead guilty, says his lawyer. It could mean that he faces a sentence of up to 150 years in prison after he appears in a New York court on Thursday. He's been charged with 11 crimes, including fraud, perjury and money laundering. Madoff is also under investigation for nearly £200 million of fraudulent gains in London. Here in Britain, the Bank of England will today take its first steps to improve the economy by quantitative easing. It has created £75 billion of extra cash to pump into the economy. At midday, it will hold an auction to buy up £2 billion of government bonds. This is intended to release more cash to be lent to businesses and consumers. Sport in football, Liverpool smashed Real Madrid out of the Champions League, beating them 4-0 at Anfield. Captain Steven Gerrard scored 2. That meant they go through to the quarterfinals comfortably, whereas Chelsea just got through against Juventus, winning 3-2 on aggregate. They drew their match in Italy last night 2-2. In cricket, England were unable to take the West Indies' last 2 wickets in the final test, so the game ended in a draw and the Windies win the series 1-0. The football successes caused some joyful headlines on the sports pages of the morning papers. Wrecking ball Gerrard makes rubble of Real as Liverpool walks on air, writes The Guardian. It's the more pithy Reeling Madrid in The Express, Demolition in The Mail and Unreal Massacre of Madrid in The Mirror. On the front pages, both The Guardian and The Telegraph agree on the story from Northern Ireland. United in wave of revulsion, says The Telegraph. Ireland unites against the killers is The Guardian's version. A commentary in The Telegraph argues that what it calls an about-face by Republican chiefs in support of the police bodes well for the country. The Guardian tells us that the Good Friday generation fears the return of the gun. The Times takes a different tack. Quoting security sources, it says that renegade IRA groups coordinated attacks. It goes on to report that the surge in violence in the province has led MI5 to divert more resources there. It also says that the situation has raised questions about the government's state of readiness. The Mail and the Sun lead with a demonstration in Luton against a parade of soldiers after they returned home from Iraq. Hate for heroes is the Mirror's headline. Welcome home is the Mail's caption under a picture of Muslim demonstrators carrying placards reading slogans such as Butchers of Basra. It goes on, these soldiers who've lost 12 comrades returned home to be greeted by this hate-filled mob. There's more news throughout the day at guardian.co.uk.
Stephen Paul Carroll, who was 48 and from Banbridge in County Down, is the first policeman to be killed in Northern Ireland for many years. The Continuity IRA claimed it shot PC Carroll in the head on Monday evening in Craigavon in County Armagh. His killing followed the weekend's double murder by the real IRA of 2 young British soldiers who died in a hail of gunfire outside the Massarine Army barracks in Antrim. Hugh Orde, the Northern Ireland Chief Constable, described the killing of PC Carroll as not only an attack on the peace process, but an attack on the whole community. Ireland correspondent Henry MacDonald has been gauging reaction in Craigavon.
There is a sense of shock. There's also a sense of fear that we're slipping back to the bad old days. And the majority of people you speak to, especially people from their 30s up to pensioners, are concerned that there could be any slippage towards the troubles again. I don't think that's likely, but you can understand their feelings. Interestingly, on the estate where the shots were fired that killed the police officer, there was a contrasting views in terms of age group. The older people were opposed and appalled to what had happened to the policeman, but some of the teenagers on this Republican housing estate, a lot of graffiti in celebrating the exploits of the continuity IRA, a lot of younger people said they supported the organisation, which was quite surprising, and I suppose from the viewpoint of the political parties at Stormont, quite disturbing as well.
The Real IRA carried out the attack on Saturday at Massarine Barracks in Antrim when two soldiers were murdered, and then it was the Continuity IRA, as you said, that killed the policeman. What's the difference between these two groups?
The difference is their origins. The Continuity IRA is a much older organisation. It's formed in 1986 out of a split within Sinn Féin and the IRA over recognising the legitimacy of the Irish Parliament in Dublin. It regards itself as one of the most purest of all forms of Republicans. They're very much Republican fundamentalists, if you like. The Real IRA emerged much, much later in 1997. Disgruntlement then over the terms of their ceasefire and where they were going as an organisation, i.e. the Provisionals. They sometimes operate in unison, sometimes they operate independently, but what seems to be going on at the minute in this burst of terrorism that we've had over the last 3 or 4 days is one playing catch up with the other. You have the Continuity IRA using an opportunistic moment, i.e. a police officer being lured into a housing estate late at night to emulate what the Real IRA did on Saturday at the British Army Barracks with the death of those two young soldiers.
During the days of the Troubles, such attacks would invariably be followed by violence from loyalist terrorists. Is there any chance of that happening?
Well, it's difficult to say. Certainly yesterday, the loyalist paramilitary leadership on the Shankill Road, the UVF, met to discuss the crisis, I understand, and they then concluded that there should be no retaliation, that they were only falling into a trap set by dissident Republicans. Now, the longer this goes on, the harder it gets, I suppose, from their viewpoint to hold back, so we'll see. But thus far, they have stayed out of this, and I think their political leaders want them to do so.
Henry MacDonald. Well, Dolores Kelly, the SDLP Assembly Member for Craigavon, said yesterday that we are staring into the abyss. Do these attacks herald a return to the bad old days of the Troubles? Guardian columnist Jonathan Friedland.
I don't. I think that's the obvious fear when you see images again of British servicemen being gunned down, claims of responsibility from Republican groups. It has all the language, imagery of those dark old days in the past. But the reason why I don't think we're going back is by the reactions of everybody else. You see, when you see Gerry Adams and Martin McGuinness stepping forward to say, to condemn these killings, when you see the leader of the Unionist parties, Peter Robinson, now the First Minister, leader of the Democratic Unionist Party, Ian Paisley's old party, reacting by also obviously condemning and saying we all stand together, but clearly making space for McGuinness and Adams to not be under any extra pressure to go further than they can. In other words, understanding that these are dissident Republicans whose real challenge is to Adams and McGuinness. And you see the Unionist leaders giving Adams and McGuinness some space rather than saying, we call on you to denounce in the strongest possible terms, etc. In other words, there's an understanding now that all of the mainstream political parties from the DUP right through to Sinn Féin are in this together, and that this is an attack on them, and that they're not going to start actually letting the bombers succeed by dividing people against each other.
Is Sinn Féin politically strong enough to continue to see off a challenge from dissident Republicans?
Well, it's always a work in progress, and I think Sinn Féin themselves will be the first to say that. Their goal always, from the very beginning, was to, even if it meant moving very slowly, to advance in such a way that they kept their movement, the Republican movement, together, and that they didn't endure too many breakaways or splits. That was always their objective, and they were remarkably successful. so that the so-called dissident Republicans are very few in number. There's some intelligence reports say these groups may amount to no more than a few families, really very, very few people indeed. Nevertheless, I don't think the Sinn Féin leadership would be ever complacent about it. They know it's real, and they want to make sure that they don't get the oxygen of publicity, if you like, which can enable them to pump up beyond their and larger than their natural size. So no complacency, but they are nothing like the kind of political force that they would want to be, or that republicanism when it was at odds with the rest of the mainstream political process, nothing like on a scale to compare with that.
Jonathan Friedland, and there's full coverage today at guardian.co.uk/UK/Northern Ireland. Also on The Guardian's website, David Lacey considers the legend of Brian Clough, while Patrick Barkham meets other people portrayed in the film The Damned United at guardian.co.uk/film. Anorexia cases have risen by 80% in the last 10 years. Former sufferer Laurie Penny reports at guardian.co.uk/health. And does it really matter what Shakespeare looked like? Andrew Dixon asks that question at guardian.co.uk/arts. If Barack Obama commits America to the deep carbon cuts that scientists and campaigners say are needed to tackle global warming, he'll face a revolution. That's according to the head of the United Nations climate body, Rajendra Pachauri. He's head of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or the IPCC. At a summit of climate scientists in Copenhagen, he told our environment correspondent David Adam it was politically impossible for Obama to match Europe's short-term climate targets.
I was in Washington 2 weeks ago. I spent a lot of time with Todd Stern. I appeared before the Senate Committee on Environment and Public Works. I've been meeting others who are in the business of decision-making. And I made it very clear to them that that's not good enough. The U.S. has to at least get to the level of the EU. And I can tell you, some of them appreciate that fact. Now, whether it happens, I don't know. But just bringing it down to 1990 levels by 2020 is not enough. But look at it from the political point of view.
Yes.
Obama is talking about something that is radically different from what was said 2 years ago. You've got to give him a little bit of space. He's not going to say that by 2020 I'm going to reduce emissions by 30%. He'll have a revolution on his hands. And, you know, he has to do it step by step. Look at the people that he's got in office. He's got Steve Chu as Secretary of Energy. He's got Carol Browner, and, you know, I saw her as well. And she made a very good point. She says, in 5 weeks of taking office, this administration has done more than anyone would do in 5 years.
But how long can we give them then? Are you saying that the US won't commit to 20-30% cuts this year?
No, I'm only going by the statement that Obama has made. But I think there'll be a tightening of the situation.
But if we leave here in December,
yeah,
and the US has not taken on the kind of commitments that Europe has suggested, is that a failure?
It's hard to say. I mean, really depends on what they come up with.
But in terms of science, in terms of response to the science, do you think it's an adequate response?
Well, if I could express an opinion, which is very difficult to justify purely on the basis of science, I personally think that the 2-degree target also needs to be questioned. I mean, one of the things that we have brought out very clearly in the fourth assessment report is that with that level of stabilization, we are going to essentially commit the world to sea level rise on account of warming of the oceans themselves, thermal expansion of 0.4 to 1.4 meters. So that means even if you stop somewhere in the middle of that range, let's say 0.6 or 0.7 meters, that's pretty serious. It's pretty grim for several parts of the world.
Rajendra Pachauri talking to David Adam. My name's John Dennis. Still to come in Guardian Daily, Prince Charles is accused of quackery by a leading scientist.
It is based on theories and concepts which are long outdated and go back to the Middle Ages.
But first, 9 people were arrested yesterday over a suspected £40 million mortgage fraud involving more than 500 properties. The police inquiry centres on a mortgage broker called Eastbourne Financial Services Limited, which is now in liquidation. With the details is our crime correspondent, Sandra Laville.
Well, we know that 9 people were arrested yesterday morning in the Eastbourne area for an alleged fraud of £40 million worth of mortgage fraud on the Bradford and Bingley Bank.
And this involved buy-to-let.
Yeah, the Bradford and Bingley was one of the biggest buy-to-let lenders, and that market has been particularly prone, police say, to criminals exploiting the loopholes in the system and the lack of regulations to defraud mortgage companies. And these deals are now kind of falling apart as the property market collapses.
How widespread is the problem of mortgage fraud?
Well, police forces across the country have all been given an intelligence report advising them that they need to start investigating these frauds and giving them information about what these frauds are and how people operate them. And senior officers are very concerned that they're poisoning the whole mortgage market.
And how does it work?
Well, essentially, in general, the cases can be, and this one I understand involves, the overvaluing of 500 properties which were bought between 2005 and 2007. So with the involvement of corrupt solicitors, mortgage brokers, accountants, etc., you would get a mortgage from a lender and you would say that the flat was worth £180,000, whereas actually it was worth £80,000. You cream off the £100,000 and you put a tenant in who's paying you the rent, so you're winning double there. And then it's only when the market crashes even more that the properties are worth a quarter of what the loan is, and the lenders are therefore open to huge losses.
And as the market downturn continues, we're likely to see more and more of these cases.
We're definitely likely to see more and more. The police are proactively investigating these cases and say they get them on their desks almost on a daily basis.
Sandra Laville. A leading scientist has accused Prince Charles of endangering public health. Edzard Ernst, Professor of Complementary Medicine at Peninsula Medical School in Exeter, says the prince is promoting quackery with a £10 detox product sold by his duchy company. Professor Ernst says it was a dangerous waste of money and that Charles was misleading people and ignoring science.
It is based on theories and concepts which are long outdated and they go back to the Middle Ages and have been shown to be implausible, if not absurd. Secondly, the two ingredients, and I happen to know one of them particularly well because I've published on artichoke extract, will certainly not show any efficacy in terms of eliminating anything from the body, particularly not toxin. Thirdly, I would argue that selling 50 milliliters for £10 is exploiting an unsuspecting public during times which are hard and we can ill afford these extra expenses. Fourthly, I would argue that there is a real and credible form of detox, namely the treatment of drug dependence, and by promoting a detox tincture of that nature, Duchy Originals are giving a bad name to that detox. My fifth point is that also there's a credible side of herbal medicine, and I've been involved for 15 years in researching herbal medicine, and I can assure you there's a lot into it. And by promoting bogus detox herbal tinctures, I think Prince Charles is in danger of giving a bad name to herbal medicine.
Could you just expand on that? I mean, do you mean that human bodies don't really need detoxifying?
Well, we understand much more about physiology, pathophysiology, than we did a couple of hundred years ago when detox was all the rage. And we understand that we have a number of organs which are actively involved in detoxing our body. If that is the term, if you want to call it detox, the kidneys, the guts, the liver, etc. So a healthy person doesn't need that, and there's no evidence that you can enhance the normal function of a healthy person through anything, certainly not through artichoke or dandelion.
And have any detox products been subjected to scientific tests?
The type of detox Prince Charles has in mind has never been proven, neither in principle nor in any real way in clinical trials with any specific remedy. The detox that we call detox in real medicine, namely the treatment of drug dependence, is very serious business indeed, and has a very serious background, and of course has been tested. The answer is yes and no, but certainly no for the Duchy Originals detox tincture.
Would you go as far as to say that these products being sold by Duchy are a danger to public health?
There are two dangers here. First of all, the promotion of anti-science, and that's what it is in my view, undermines rationality in society in a major way, and that has ill effects far beyond healthcare. And secondly, there's a more specific risk. If we are led to believe that we can overindulge during times of celebration like Christmas with food and drink and etc., and make everything okay again by taking detox tincture, we are not only led up the garden path, but we are also contributing to the ill health of the nation. So arguably, I think Prince Charles is contributing to ill public health here.
Professor Edzard Ernst, Phil Maynard and Tim Mabey were the producers of today's edition of Guardian Daily. I'm John Dennis. Thank you for listening.